The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's Pharrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seat, broken into bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad actors, bad taste, bad law, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. So anyway, I kind of wanted to go back in time and let you know how I got here to this point where I am at Sports Grid styling in March of 2020 as we get ready for conference tournaments and NCAA tournaments and baseball's regular season right around the corner doing push-ups. How did I get here? I was walking Boston and kind of going back in time and reflecting on my career and how it all started and how I ended up doing TV here at the Meadowlands at the FanDuel Sportsbook in East Rutherford, New Jersey, next to the Giants and Jets Stadium, MetLife. So here's the deal. I went to high school in Pittsburgh. I went to a gigantic high school called Mount Lebanon High School in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. And strangely enough, I lived in Mount Lebanon, and across town lived a family that I didn't know, and I never knew. I had no idea who they were, but they lived in Mount Lebanon on the other side of the town, and I had never had any contact with them, didn't know them from Adam, and probably never would have. But when I went to college, I decided to go to Indiana University in the Big Ten. I wanted to be around Bob Knight, and I accomplished that goal. I got into Indiana. And it's just the craziest story ever. But when I was at IU in Bloomington, I went there for journalism school. And I was a smart-ass kid, know-it-all, hot temper, crazy, wild. I had grown up playing ice hockey, street hockey, basketball, and I was a tennis player. And everybody knew I was really good at tennis. And I grew up playing on clay, and I got really good. And I ended up playing college tennis, and I ended up going to IU. And then one thing led to another. When I was there, I met this chick, and I started dating her. And strangely enough, it was the daughter of the family that lived in Mount Lebanon, where I was from in Pittsburgh. How crazy is that? So I ended up meeting this chick, Tracy, and she was cool as hell. And I never knew her. She did not go to my high school, but I met her in IU in the frat system. I was a Phi Psi. She was a Tri Delta. or something like that. And I met her at the fraternity. And next thing you knew, I started dating her. I mean, bottom line was, I ended up hanging out with this chick and staying tied to her for my entire 5 years I was in Bloomington. Now, I wasn't there for just 4 years to get a degree and get out of there and go work in the real world. I was there doing broadcasting. So I was in Ernie Pyle School of Journalism. I struggled in some things like J-Law, which is the legal end of journalism school. You had to pass the J-Law class, which I took 3 times. That's how hard it was. It was brutal. It was lawyer stuff, First Amendment stuff. It was crazy. It was way over my pay grade, way over my conscience, and I hated it. But in terms of journalism, so I did TV, and I did radio, and I did written journalism as a newspaper reporter, as a writer, magazine writer, etc. I did really well in all that stuff. I got really good grades as a broadcaster and as a writer. So when I was a kid, my dad always told me, you can't be a broadcaster or amount to a hill of beans unless you know how to write. You got to write before you can open that fat mouth of yours. And so I went to journalism school. And then I knew that when I was there, I had to do well writing. And I was very creative and I was very, I guess, argumentative. And I had opinions and I had a thought stream. So I was able to write columns and I was able to write stories and I knew what I was doing and I got great grades. The only thing I struggled in was J-Law. Everything else was a breeze. Once I got through J-Law, I graduated. But when I was there, I did 60 hours a week on the radio. So the station that I worked for was called 97WB and it was a Chicago-owned, radio company-owned radio station. It was not a college radio station per se. Like Mafia worked at a college radio station at Seton Hall, and they have a great radio station there, rock and roll station. And he did great things there, and he ended up working at Sirius XM. But what I did was I was actually on a real radio station where you got paid. So I had a career. I was getting paid. I made decent money. I was on the air in mornings, afternoons, and then I overnight DJed. I always tell the story, I was a DJ from midnight to 6. So, I mean, I barely made it to classes. I never took morning classes ever. I took everything in the afternoon in college, and that was that. Because I was working every night at midnight, overnight, running the records, spinning music on this top 40 station. That's what it was. But they did heavy morning show traffic and news and weather and sports. They just constantly were doing these updates like it was an all-news station. But in the morning, that's what they did. So every 15 minutes, there was a sports report. So I was working with this guy named Joe Smith, and he put me on the air. The way I got on the air, when I went to Indiana, I was there going to school, and I knew I needed to get on the air. So I met this guy I knew that worked at the sports information office at IU at Assembly Hall. He worked for Bob Knight. He worked for Bill Mallory. He was the sports information director. He worked for Kit Klingelhofer, a guy that ran the whole kit and caboodle. And then this guy, Eric, that I knew, he introduced me to Joe at a party. It was after an Indiana football game or something. I went to this party and everybody was drinking beer. And the bottom line was I started messing with this guy, Joe Smith, and talking to him and getting him going and getting him rambling and getting him hammered. Bottom line, we all got hammered, but I got him going and got him raging on sports and my opinions. I got him all hot and bothered. And then one thing led to another. I was like, I could do what you do and I can do it better. I said, I know you're a badass. I know you're great at what you do and I'm better. That really got him mad. And he said, all right, hot shot, why don't you come to work for me? So I did. And that's how I got in. I got my foot in the door. Next thing you knew, I was doing everything. What was great about the gig was, is that A, it got me hugely recognized at Indiana. So everyone on campus, 40,000 people went to school there when I went to school there. Everyone knew who I was because I was the guy on the radio. And everyone listened to the station because it was the best station. And really, there was, I think, 2 radio stations in town. And we kicked the other station's ass. And I got hugely popular, And it was because I did both the sports and overnight DJed. So when I was in the Five-Star House, I was clearly lit when it came to my juice. I had a voice. Everyone knew that I was popular. Everyone knew that I mattered. I was on the air and everyone listened to me. Everyone thought I was crazy. Everyone thought I was wild. Everybody thought I was different. Everybody thought I had a crazy voice. Everyone knew that Pharrell was the man on the radio. And it started then. I got huge in college. And what was great about it was is that I worked the overnight, so I was able to bring my girlfriend into the radio station and we would have sex. So that was awesome. I'd be spinning records. I could play multiple songs, bang, 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 in a row, and then I could just cause trouble. I literally had parties at the radio station. I had relations in the radio station. I had friends come to the radio station when I DJed. We'd lock the doors to the radio station. No one could get in. I worked overnights. It was 2, 3 in the morning. I was having bashes in there. People were doing bad things. I mean, we were sparking up fatties, the whole deal. Smoking, drinking, sex, the whole deal. It was all happening as I was spinning Billy Idol and Madonna. So that was awesome. And obviously, I had a blast at IU and in the Five-Star House. I was a lunatic. I was involved in all that stuff, being a pledge, being a brother, being hazed, hazing myself. I'm guilty of all that. I did it all. When I was there in the 80s, that stuff was norm. It was every day. It was automatic. When you went to be a fraternity brother, you had to pledge, and then you had to basically get abused. And then when you get in and you're a brother and you've been through it and you've been abused, then you start abusing yourself. Now everyone will say that it's changed and they don't do that anymore and there's none of that going on. And that's a lie. I mean, that's what that is. That's a lie because it still happens to this day. It's happening right now in front of your very eyes. And you hear it all the time. You see these fraternities, some guy drinks himself to death or he was being hazed. And then you see lawsuits for hazing and everything else. But not only do they haze in fraternities, they haze in sororities, right? So, and that's just all there is to it. And I know kids that are in fraternities right now and they tell me the same thing. So I had a blast at the Five-Star House, and it was complete insanity. I have friends to this day that I was hooked up with when I was there. I had a blast. I drank like a fish. I did everything bad, you name it. Felonies, automatic. Road trips, I did it all. I'll never forget, I road tripped with brothers to the 85 World Series between the Cardinals and Royals. We went to Kansas City and saw the Royals beat the Cardinals in the World Series. It was crazy. Brett Saberhagen, the whole deal. Road trip, went skiing all the time. Road trip to Final Fours. I went to the Final Four in the Superdome in New Orleans when Indiana beat Syracuse my senior year. Indiana was down 13 with 3 minutes to go, and they still won the game on a Key Smart baseline jumper on a pass from Darryl Thomas. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I got to celebrate with Bob Knight and the Hoosiers, and it was unbelievable. And then after the game, we went out on Bourbon Street and ate shrooms and tripped our faces off for 8 hours. That was awesome. I was young and dumb and a lunatic, and I had money. That was even better because I was DJing and everything and doing sports updates, and I had a paycheck so I could go on the road. I could go get a hotel in New Orleans. I could go to the Final Four. I got credentials to sporting events. I could go to any football game, any basketball game. I could go to the World Series, and I'd get credentials, and I'd even get tickets. It didn't matter. Nothing stopped me, and that was fun. And I was able to maintain my relationships with friends in the Five-Star House through all the years. Now that I'm Pharrell on a bench and I've done the show for 35 years, everyone knows me from that time. And everyone knows me from that fraternity. To this day, 75% of the brothers that I knew still stay in touch with me. And they still follow me on everything. Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. They follow the show. They watch the show. They listen to the shows. It's been pretty cool.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the Daily Roto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using Daily Roto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's funny because I dated that chick, Tracy, for 5 years at IU. And then when I got out of Indiana, I dated her for a few more years, probably 3 more years, I'd say. So I was with her for about 8 years. So when I got out of Indiana, I moved back to Pittsburgh and I started being a news writer for a CBS radio affiliate, KQV 1410 in Pittsburgh. Give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the world. That was their motto. My motto was, give us 22 minutes, we'll put you to sleep. I thought everybody on there was cool and everything. I liked a lot of them. I was good friends with this guy, Steve Lowell, who was an anchor man. He later passed away. That was a drag. I used to party with him like a rock star. When we weren't on the air, I mean, we just went at it hard in Pittsburgh. I grew up there. I knew Pittsburgh like the back of my hand, and I knew where to throw down, party, drink, eat, you name it. I knew how to do it. Get in trouble, count on it. I did it all. And so I worked there. I worked around a lot of great pros, legendary broadcasters. And I was a news writer. I had gone to journalism school. I knew how to write news, murders, crime, whatever, fires, you name it. Whatever it was, I did it. And just Allegheny County itself, I covered the whole scene. I covered the whole city. It was crazy. So all I know is one thing led to another, and Paul Steigerwald was the sports director of KQV. He was doing the sports every day on the radio. And then he ended up getting a job at the Penguins as Mike Lang's color analyst on the Penguin broadcast. And Mike Lang was the most popular broadcaster for hockey in Pittsburgh, obviously. But he also, along with Myron Cope, the legendary analyst of the Steelers, he used to do the games with Jack Fleming. So Myron Cope was a legendary writer, did a radio show in the afternoons on WTAE in Pittsburgh. It was hugely successful, and he was very popular. He was the voice of Pittsburgh sports, bottom line. Not just the Steelers, but literally the voice of the whole city. And then Mike Lang was the voice of the Penguins, and he was just skyrocketing popularity with all his little sayings and slangs and things that he did when they scored goals. Buy Sam a drink and get his dog. 1, 2, hallelujah, Hollywood. Elvis has left the building. Michael motorcycle. Great balls of fire. You name it, he did it all. And then Paul Steigerwald ended up his color analyst, and they would broadcast together for like 20 years. So he left KQV, and when he left, I went to the GM, this guy by the name of Bob Dickey, who would later pass away at an old age. I knew his sons, the whole deal. I confronted him constantly. We'd come in the newsroom screaming and yelling about not having stories done and being on top of things and broadcasting big stories and this and that. He'd always be in the newsroom screaming and yelling, telling people what to do. Every time he came in there, I'd give him the business. Every time he came in there, I would tell him that I should be the sports guy. and that I'm the best. And it didn't matter what he did, who he put on, who filled in, who did it that day, this day, whatever day, that they sucked and I was better. I used to literally drive the guy nuts. And then one day he got so sick and tired of hearing me, he finally said, all right, hotshot, I'm going to put you on the air. I said, you put me on the air for a week and that'll be the last time anybody else does it. Sure enough, he put me on for a week. And then I went and did what I do. I was able to do the sports and I did it kick ass and I got the gig. I mean, it was that simple. Once he put me on, I took over and I was loud and I was fast and I was insane and I was intense and I got noticed real quickly in Pittsburgh and I got named the sports director. I was 23 years old and I was the youngest sports director in the city's history. And I was going up against all these heavyweights like Myron Cope and the guys on the air in Pittsburgh that were Stan Savran, all these famous, powerful people that made a lot of money. And I was this young, show-off, gravelly-voiced pain in the ass. And I think a lot of them wanted to slap me in the face and tell me to shut up. But I wasn't having it. I just kept being different, unique and crazy and wild, and most of the players loved it. I would interview them. I covered the Pirates, Penguins, and Steelers every day of my life for 3 years. And I traveled with the Steelers, and then I went to every single game, every week, everywhere. Same with the Pirates. I covered the Pirates every day, 100% at home, and then every single Penguin game. And I would go on the road and go to Philly to see him play the Flyers, and I'd go to D.C. to see him play the Capitals, and New York to see him play the Islanders. I hated the Islanders and the Rangers growing up because I was a Penguin fan. But it was really cool. I got to cover Mario Lemieux when he was drafted, and Jaromir Jagr, and it was just a great time. When I was there, they got drafted, and they started playing there. At the beginning of their career, I was there. These are two guys that became absolute rock star legends, Hall of Famers. Lemieux's one of the greatest players that ever put on hockey skates and ever played the game. And I got to meet him, know him, be friends with him, cover him, talk to him every day for years. And it was really awesome to build relationships like that. Eventually, they would win their first Stanley Cup, and I would literally freak out. And I was not living there when they finally won the Stanley Cup. I had left Pittsburgh, and then they went back-to-back in 91 and 92, and then they did it again in 2016 and 2017, and they won one in the middle in 09 in Detroit in Game 7 over the Red Wings on the Talbot, 2-1 in Game 7 at the Joe. But just being around Lemieux was huge for me because I had been around Bob Knight, and then I got to be around Mario Lemieux. I mean, these are two figures in sports history that everyone's heard of and everyone knows. Lemieux owns the Penguins to this day. It was just an incredible experience. And then at the time, I was still dating that girl, Tracy, from Pittsburgh, and she was living in Chicago at the time. She was a big shot banker at this bank called Continental in Chicago, big time corporate banker. She was really smart, got huge grades, went to the Kelly School of Business in Indiana and was straight A's and ended up studying abroad and ended up moving to Chicago and working for this powerful bank and making all kinds of money and lived in the city, had a fat apartment, I remember. And I used to go there on weekends. I would literally, because I didn't work on the weekends unless I was covering a Steeler game. If it wasn't Steeler season, I'd blow off the Pirates, blow off the Penguins to go to Chicago. And I would just jump over there. You know, you can fly to Chicago in an hour or sometimes drive, which was insane. It was like 8 hours. I hated that, but I did it sometimes when I didn't have any money. But for the most part, I would fly over there and then I'd take a train into the city and I'd get off the train and I'd hop in a cab and go to her apartment and then spend the weekend with her having multiple sessions, which is relations in Portuguese. Basically, I kept sleeping with this chick for 3 years after college, 5 years in college, 8 years together. We would have thought at some point or another that I would have married this chick because I was with her so long. But one thing led to another. and it just died. The travel, the distance, being in separate cities caught up with us, and that was the end of it. I never really saw her again. It was weird. Her little brother was a Phi Psi. He ended up joining my fraternity because of me, unless I'm crazy. But he joined the Phi Psi house. He loved it. He was a brother, and I never saw him again either. It was crazy. I never saw her dad again. Her dad was this gigantic, filthy, rich furniture magnate. He owned some of the biggest furniture stores in Pittsburgh, and he made a fortune. Guy was filthy rich. I never saw him again either. And I was really tight with the family, like super tight with the parents and the brother and her. And one thing led to another. I never saw him again as long as I lived. And that's just crazy, right? I was just thinking about it, walking my dog. I know that she ended up getting married and having kids and stuff. But you know she never forgot Uncle Futrelli. They never do. They never do. So one thing leads to another. I'm in Pittsburgh, and eventually I get fired. I was so insane on the air, and I was crazy. My lifestyle was crazy. I was partying. I got mugged one night in Pittsburgh, in Oakland, out at Pitt. I was with this chick, and I was on a date. We were drinking. We were drunk. We were hammered. We were leaving the bars. It was 3 a.m. We were going back to her place to have sex. And the next thing you knew, we got rolled by these three young brothers, crept up on us and put a gun in our face. And then I fought them. I was drunk. I was insane. So I fought them. I smacked one of them, punched one of them in the face, got one of them on the ground, started splitting his head open on a curb. But I had a bottle of wine with me that I dropped. It didn't break. They picked it up, and the guy hit me over the head a couple times with it, and I was just basically concussed, and I was gushing blood from my head. He split my head open. He smashed the gun into this chick's face, split her head open. She was gushing blood. They beat us to a pulp. I beat them to a pulp. It was a huge fight. Eventually, people opened up their home front doors and came out and started screaming, and then they ran off and left us for dead. Next thing you know, an ambulance picked us up and brought us to Presbyterian Hospital. I lost a pint of blood. I was messed up. The next day, I was a headline in the newspaper. The KQV sportscaster gets rolled in Oakland and beaten to a pulp. And that didn't go over well with CBS and my boss. The old man was screaming and yelling at me, and he fired me. Not because I got rolled, but because I had been pretty wild and pretty crazy on the air, and I didn't listen to anybody, and I just did my own thing, and I was a renegade. And eventually he just got sick and tired. He's like, you need to go do talk radio. You're nuts. You're insane. You are completely off the rocker, and you need to go do something else, because doing all news sports updates is not for you. Go to something bigger and better. Go do talk radio. And I was like, that's a great idea. At the time when he fired me, he owed me $20,000 or something like that. He gave me a check to finish off my contract, and I took the money and I moved to Steamboat, Colorado, and I took $30,000 and I just went skiing. I drove to Steamboat. I skied every day. I tree skied. I deep powder skied. Fluff skied. Corn powder skied. Did it all. Chased women. Drank. Behaved poorly. Lived it up. Smoked. Just skied every day of my life. Worked in a ski shop. Built bad relationships. Caused trouble. And then eventually I'd move back to Chicago.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life. So I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is going to be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When I left Steamboat, I went to Chicago and I started working at Sports Channel covering the Blackhawks and the White Sox. I had to get my act together. I had to get back to work. I had to get back on the air. So one thing led to another, and I did that in Chicago for a couple years. And it was funny because I had broken up with that chick. I never saw her again. And I was living in Chicago and I still never saw her. So it was what it was. When I moved back to Chicago and I didn't see her anymore, I didn't know her anymore, I dated this other chick, this crazy chick, smoke show hottie, that went to Michigan State. She was a gymnast at Michigan State. I ended up living with her for like 2 years, and we were just absolutely hitting it hard. The bars, drinking, partying, living it up, the whole deal. And I was working on Sports Channel and doing my job and just living life to the fullest. It was crazy. Eventually, she set all my clothes on fire and threw them out a window of a condo, and we broke up. And I moved to Sarasota, Florida, where I always joke, like Harry Carey used to say, Sarasota. And hi, friends, it's the White Sox at Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota, Florida. So I was down there covering the White Sox, and I eventually did A-ball play-by-play, Florida Gulf Coast League. I lived there in Siesta Key. It was awesome. That was my first taste of being a beach bum. I just wanted to live life and lay on the beach and chill on the beach and live near the water and get a tan and not have people screaming and yelling at me, not have girlfriends screaming and yelling, not have bosses screaming and yelling, not having the pressure. I just like being basically on a beach cruiser and soaking in life. And I did that, and I still was golfing, and I was doing A-ball baseball down in the minor leagues, obviously, covering everything from spring training to the regular season in the minors. It was cool or whatever, but I didn't amount to a hill of beans. It's not like I mattered or anything. I lived there for like 3 years, and I did everything. I went to a lot of Buccaneer games, Lightning games. I lived south of Tampa in Sarasota and Siesta Key, and I loved it. I loved living there. I thought it was badass. And I had the time of my life, and I lived with a good friend, Scott, and that's how I met my buddy Shabin, who is a heavy metal guitarist, and he ended up being Ozzy the Sports Junkie, a sports talk show host in Sarasota and Gulf Coast area down there in Tampa, Sarasota, and all that, Venice. All I know is that he, I think, wanted to follow what I did. He wanted to be what I did, the Pharrell on the Bench show. He loved it, and I was always doing it, and he knew I did it. He knew I was on the radio, and he wanted to do it too, and he loved sports, so he ended up doing it. I lived with him for a while down in Sarasota as well and partied with him and his band, Vendetta. And we did a lot of very bad things, felonies, automatic, and once again, just lived hard, rock star status lifestyle, and just every weekend doing live concerts all over the area. And I would go with the band and just rage and absolutely do awful bad things. But one thing led to another, and I ended up leaving Sarasota. I met this chick, and I moved with her to Flagstaff, Arizona. One thing led to another. I ended up living there for a little while, doing radio in Williams, Arizona, which is on Route 66. Get your kicks on Route 66. I was doing the super oldies station, playing like, if I knew you were coming, I'd have banked you, can't hire the band. Played out loud, if I knew you were coming, I'd have baked you a cake. Anyway, I played all these oldies, golden oldies, bands, you name it, and I wanted to kill myself, so I ended up having an opportunity to audition for a gig in Phoenix, And right before I was going to do the audition and get the gig, they gave it to this kid, Arnie Spanier, who ended up doing national radio. Arnie's a cool guy. He went to the University of Arizona. He got the gig. Arnie was doing Sports Entertainment Network in Vegas. He went to Phoenix to do the local big gig. And then his job was open at SEN, the national gig, which was Sports Entertainment Network. It was a national network with 300-some affiliates around the country. They did sports talk. And he quit his job, and then I found out how to get an audition for his gig. One thing led to another, and I did an audition on a Saturday and a Sunday. And the way I got it was the program director went down to Prescott, Arizona to go to the Prescott Downs, which is a horse race track, thoroughbreds. And I drove in 110-degree desert heat in my truck to Prescott. I went to the press box and said there was an emergency, and would Rod Stoll come to the press box? Guy came to the press box. He's like, scared to death. There's an emergency. And instead, it was me saying, I want Arnie Spanier's job. I'm Pharrell. I'm a badass. Put me on the air one day, and that'll be that. And he's like, you must be nuts, dude, that you just did this to me. And I go, I am nuts. Put me on the air, and we'll see how nuts I am. I'll take over your network. He's like, all right, hot shot. So he put me on a Saturday, and I went to Vegas and auditioned, and I had 6 hours to get their attention. It took me 6 minutes to get their attention. I went on the air, and I literally flipped out. I flipped out. And I just freaked out, and I did college football all day. There was a million games, and I was gambling on the air, hitting games, hitting bets, going ballistic. And the owner of the network, a guy by the name of Jerry Kuttner, came in. I see this guy in his late 50s staring at me through the window with his jaw dropped open, watching me sweating, soaking wet, broadcasting and screaming and turning purple. And then we got to a break, and I walk out, and he introduced himself, and I said, I'm the biggest thing that's ever going to happen in your life on this network. I'm Pharrell. Pharrell on a bench. And I'm going to take over. I am the man. Everyone else sucks. Get out of my way. And the guy's like, I want to hear you do more. Do tomorrow. When I was done Sunday, he goes, come back. You're going to be on Monday through Friday. I want to hear you do a whole week. So I ended up doing morning drive that week. And the next thing I know, he said, I'm going to have you do KVUG, a local station, 840 in Vegas, and you're going to do the national network. So I was doing 3 hours of local radio. And then I was doing 3 hours of national radio every single day from Vegas. I did the show from Bally Sportsbook, and I did it right in the sportsbook. It was crazy. I worked there for a year or two, and I was unbelievable. I got to meet John Renshaw. I love Wrench. I got to meet Papa Joe Chevalier. I worked with him. Eventually, Sports Entertainment Network, he sold it to 101 Sports in Chicago. It would become Sporting News Radio. When they sold it and turned it into 101 Sports, I was still doing the show for them. They had these suits, these new bosses. They came in all gung-ho, telling everybody how it was going to be. They were taking over, and it was going to be this way, not that way. And then I was like, this sucks. And I was loving life living in Vegas. Believe me, I'm meant for Vegas. I was living on Koba Lane. I was hitting it up hard. I was gambling all the time at the Las Vegas Hilton, which is now the Westgate, where the Superbook is. I used to hang there. I used to do the show in Vegas every day. And Renshaw and I became really good friends. And I moved to Atlanta to work at CNN. And I got to work at the CNN Center down there by the Omni. Ted Turner owned the whole thing. And I'm sitting there working in his building on 680 The Fan, CNN Radio. And it was incredible. Eventually, Renshaw would follow me there. I was doing afternoon drive. Then he was doing nights. I was doing 3 to 7, and he was doing like 7 to 10 or something like that. So Wrench and I stayed really good friends. And in Atlanta, we partied really hard together. We did a lot of bad things. And we would go to games, and we'd go drinking and thinking and yelling and screaming and spinning and laughing and hurling and talking and just causing trouble. Shot of beer and an iron 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 shot of beer. Puke. I took over Atlanta. I was number one in afternoon drive. I made a ton of money. I made the station a ton of money. I got very popular. I used to do these Friday shows at a bar called The Lodge in Buckhead that was just a beer-throwing, chicks, topless scene of debauchery and just awesomeness. It was so rowdy there. Eventually, one day, I even got handcuffed. They accused me of running a sex party or something. I don't know what they accused me of. All I know is I got off on all those charges. They were frivolous. Nothing ever happened to me, and I did my show down there for a couple years. One thing led to another. I told the story of how my house got hit by a tornado, and I moved to San Francisco, and I ended up at KMBR. KMBR is a great station. I was working there doing nights. 10 to 1, and it was crazy because at midnight I did Pharrellavision from midnight to 1, which was late night in the East, but I was on Sports Channel America. They filmed my show live. It was nationally syndicated. I was on in New York, Philly, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, and San Francisco and Los Angeles. And I did the radio show. The radio show was number 1. I was working with DC Cab, Brett Abbott, Max Krasny. It was a great show. It was rowdy. It was edgy. It was different. A lot of heavy metal, a lot of rock and roll, loud, screaming sports talk. I was different from anyone on the station. Everyone on the station did like talk radio. I did screaming, crazy radio. I was way more entertaining than anyone there, and that's all there is to it. I was a badass, and they all hated me, but the city loved me. I made my mark. I was very popular on radio and TV there. All the players loved me. Everyone from Steve Young to Sprewell to Chris Mullen, Hardaway, Mitch Richmond loved me. All those guys, and I had a blast. Barry Bonds was there at the time. He had come from the Pirates to the Giants. Dusty Baker was a manager. I was friends with Dusty. I had a great year in San Francisco. I loved it. I lived in the city. I didn't have any kids or anything like that. I was just free and lunatic, fringe. I had it all going. And then eventually I was working there and Mel Karmazin came to San Francisco, the most powerful man in radio, the guy that made Howard Stern. And he came and stole me away from KNBR and took me to Los Angeles to do CBS, Westwood One, and Infinity, and syndicated me to 250 radio stations across America, paid me a ton of money. I made more money than God. I was rich. I was living in a fat crib on a beach in Huntington Beach. I was doing my show in Culver City every day across America. The show was allegedly a New York show on WFAN New York. That was my alleged home station. Meanwhile, I was living in LA with a tan and a surfboard and a doobie in my mouth. But I was taking all kinds of heat from my boss in New York, Mark Chernoff, screaming and yelling. How funny that 20 years later, I'd be working for him again in New York every day of my life. And he never gave me the business then. When I was young, he gave me the business because I didn't listen to him. I was a troublemaker. I was confrontational. I was argumentative. I was disruptive. I was nuts. And when you're young and stupid, you don't listen to anyone. You think you know it all until you get taught lessons in life. So I did the show in LA for a long time. And eventually I pissed them off enough that they forced me to move to New York. I left LA after 2 homes, 3 cars, a trail of blood, 1 million friends. I had it all going. I love living in Southern California better than any place I've ever lived. I love Miami a lot. I liked working in Miami a lot. I loved having a condo in Miami a lot. I loved living in Boca a lot. But nothing compared to Huntington Beach for me. Surf City rules. It's the greatest place ever. I still love it to this day. I like going back there. I like the U.S. Open of surfing. I love the Huntington Pier. I love downtown Huntington Beach. I love the beach. And I love chicks in bikini surfing. There's nothing better in life than hot Southern California chicks surfing and being soaking wet in the ocean with blonde hair and a nice tan. There's nothing better than that in life. There really isn't. And they even smell good, like coconuts, which is kick ass.
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/DUNK to learn more.
So I ended up moving to New York, and I went back to work at WFAN, and I started doing shows on weekends or something, and it sucked. I wasn't making any money. I could barely survive, and eventually ESPN offered me a full-time gig doing nights, 7 to midnight, and I took it, and it pissed off Chernoff, and they were livid at me. They said I won the Burning Bridges Award, and I screwed him over after he brought me to New York, and bottom line is he had me working 2 days a week, and this guy gave me full-time 5 days a week and a fat paycheck. Who wouldn't have taken it? I always told him, you're mad at me that I took a full-time job and 5 times the money than you were giving me. You must be stupid or something. You got to be stupid to think that I'm dumb enough not to take that job. He said he didn't like the way I handle it. I said, kiss my ass. How's that sound? The way I handle it, handle these. Okay, you handle these and I'll worry about making fat stacks, okay? So how funny is it? I did ESPN Radio forever, and then eventually this guy wouldn't give me a contract, and I ended up going back to CBS and doing Morning Drive on legendary NEW, WNEW 1027. I was doing mornings. Opie and Anthony were doing afternoon drive. It was the craziest radio station ever. I was completely, absolutely sickening nuts on the air in the morning. I mean, just freaking out. And then in the afternoon, these guys, Opie and Anthony, were torturing people and getting gigantic ratings doing it. And it was just the greatest radio station ever. It really was. And they screwed that up, too. Sex for Sam. They had some guy had sex with his girlfriend in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and everybody ended up getting fired at the radio station. They flipped formats, and the station's never been the same since. To this day, it's some soft-ass femmy radio station that Losercom owns, and they play top 40 music. It's the absolute worst. It's like elevator music. It is as bad as it gets. But anyway, when I was there doing Morning Drive against Howard Stern, it was badass. It was one of the greatest stations in New York. It made it just absolutely shack ton of money. I lived in Midtown, 34th and Lex, right by the Empire State Building, down on the east side, like on Bar Avenue. All there was tons of bars and restaurants, and I used to just go to all of them and eat my face off and party and drink like a fish. I loved it. I hated doing Morning Drive. It was hard to get up and do mornings when I was drunk till 3 in the morning, and I had to be on the air at 5 in the morning, but I somehow managed to do it, and I pulled it off and did it. I did it as long as I could until they fired everybody. When they fired everybody, I ended up in Miami doing Morning Drive on QAM. And I loved living there and doing the show in Miami. I was number one in Miami. I had a badass show. I loved it. I loved the community. I loved the people. I did a lot of remotes, a lot of shows out and about at Marlins games, Panther games. I'm a huge Miami Hurricane fan. I did shows with them. I was on the Kane station. It was perfect. It was awesome. I made fun of Howard David one day. Got in trouble. They fired me without cause. They accused me of indecency, obscenity, hate mongering. The FCC sued me. It took 3 years, but I won the case. They couldn't prove that I was indecent, and my lawyer got me off. I'm 5-0 against the FCC. Still got fired. They fired me in Miami because of it and didn't pay me the money they owed me, but they lost the lawsuit, so they lost the case against me. I won. I still lost my job. I lost everything. How funny is it that I would end up on CBS Sports Radio doing national radio, and the entire 8 years or whatever I was there, the QAM carried my show. How funny is that? The same station that fired me because I was too obscene, they carried my show for 7.5 years. All I know is they love my show in Miami. To this day, they listen to me and watch me in Miami every day. No questions asked. How funny is that? So I end up going from Miami back to Chicago. I was doing Man Cow's Morning Madhouse. I was his sidekick, arguing with him all day. He was the man, and then I was the one giving him the business and arguing with him, being the anti-cow. I was the confrontational side. So I was supposed to be his sidekick and all this other stuff. I had the same agent, Bob Eatman, who would later die. I did that show for a while, and then Clear Channel offered me a gig in Atlanta doing middays and a ton of money. And so I did both. I did middays in Atlanta, but in the morning I did Man Cow from Atlanta. So I did that for like a year or two, and then they flipped the station to Spanish. I was on this FM talk, Real Radio or something it was called. I did it, and I loved it. It was fun. I was working a lot, like 8 hours a day live on the air, but I made a ton of money. And then they fired me because they were flipping it to Spanish, but they moved me to Fox Sports Radio. I moved to New York to do it because they had let me go in Atlanta, and 34C hated Atlanta. I was with her. I met her when I was doing NEW Morning Drive in New York. I met her when I was doing the show with Opie and Anthony. I met her having eye surgery. She ended up moving with me to Miami, living with me in Boca. We had a steamy, hot affair. It was kick-ass. Then we moved to Atlanta and lived there. She hated it there. We moved back to New York. We ended up getting married, having kids, the whole deal. But I was back in New York. I was doing Fox Sports Radio from New York every day for like 2 years. And then the next thing you know, Howard Stern called me to do Howard 101 and Sirius XM, which was awesome. I was there for 8 years, and I had the time of my life. It was just the filthiest, most disgusting, repulsive, awesome, foul language, uncensored, no rules radio. It was renegade radio stuff. It was craziness. I got away with murder. I could do anything I want every night, and no one said a word to me ever. I was there the whole time. Not one boss ever said one peep to me. It was a blast. I caused trouble and got away with it. I could have set the building on fire, and nobody would have said anything. It was phenomenal. It was the greatest gig ever. Porn stars in my studio every night doing awful things to my producers. Just all kinds of porn and just craziness and lunatic stuff, funny comedians, dirty, raunchy, filthy, funny comedians, just the funniest people on earth doing my show, rock bands, heavy metal bands, movie stars, Benicio del Toro, you name it, they were on my show. Every famous person in the world did the show. Every athlete in the world did the show. It didn't matter who you are. If you were a freak, you did my show. And I loved working for Howard. I went to Howard's wedding. I saw Mary Beth Ostrowski. I sat there with Barbara Walters and Billy Joel at the wedding at my table with 34C. It was crazy. It was insane. I loved working for Howard. I was happy there. I enjoyed it. I would have never left, but I got an offer to do CBS Sports Radio, and they offered me a long-term deal and a lot more money, and I took it. I went back to doing sports talk. I was doing sports talk on Sirius. It was just raunchy, filthy, dirty, repulsive sports talk. So it was like affecting my life, where I live. My wife, my kids were getting abused because of it, and people were talking bad about me. I was always in the media getting written about poorly, that I was the devil, I was Satan, I was raunchy, and all this other stuff. So I got sick of that, and I decided to clean up my act and do legitimate rated G family sports talk on CBS Sports Radio, what I would deem the Vatican Network. I started doing rules radio and working for Mark Chernoff again and Eric Spitz. And I did it and had to win them over because they hated me from my time in LA and then screwing them over in New York and taking the job at ESPN. So I had to work for the same people that I basically stabbed in the back. They didn't want me there, but it didn't matter because their boss was a guy named Chris Olivero. He was my producer at NEW with Opie and Anthony. So he became the president of CBS. He hired me to come back and do the national show on CBS Sports Radio. I went there because of him, certainly not because of Chernoff and Spitz. Now, Chernoff and Spitz, eventually I won him over. It took me like 4 years to win him over, but I was there for 7 full years, and I won him over, and I became good with him. I fixed the relationship, and I secured a positive relationship with him, and I did great work for him and never had a single problem the whole time I was there. I actually am happy about that, vindicating my reputation with them because they hated me, and I did a good job there. The show was huge, over 200 markets, 10 million listeners, made him a ton of money, millions. And then they came to me with the worst offer of my career because LoserCom bought CBS for $3 billion, and I knew eventually the contracts would run out and they would come and give you a pay cut and screw you over. And that's exactly what they did. I had been through many buyouts, takeovers, sales of radio networks. I've been through everything in my 30 years. I literally knew it was coming, that they were going to screw me. And sure enough, they did. They tried to give me the horrible pay cut, and I wouldn't take it, so I quit. Next thing you know, I ended up at Sports Grid with Lou Mayone and Mike Cardano and Greg Sussman and these guys doing really exciting things in sports betting. I love it. I'm having fun. I'm doing TV. I'm on the ground floor of a great young company that's doing exciting things, growing every day, signing deals every day with distribution. We're on the Sports Grid network, Sports Grid app. We're on Pluto TV, reaches millions. Zumo TV reaches millions. Watchster reaches millions. YouTube TV. I think it's going to be on a lot of regional sports networks. I think it's going to be on satellite TV. I think it's going to be on satellite radio. I know it's going on Roku. It's everywhere. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Sports betting keeps getting bigger and bigger. I think it'll be a $450 billion business in 5 years. It already is a $200 billion business. The FanDuel Sportsbook in the Meadowlands makes tons of money. It's the most profitable sportsbook in the country. It took 2 years to take over the industry. I'm on TV every single day, reaching millions, talking sports betting. When I was at CBS Sports Radio, I had lawyers up my ass every day, ruining my life, constantly treating me like a drug dealer, like I was some kind of porn peddler or pedophile. They treated me like I should have been in federal prison because I talked sports betting. They treated it as a taboo subject. You're not allowed to talk about gambling, and it was just pathetic. And then I go to this network, Sports Grid, and they enhance it. They wrap their arms around it. They love it. They absorb it. They want to talk sports betting. It's a sports betting network. That's all we talk about is sports betting and sports and everything else for that matter, but we do it with a betting angle. It's great. I love talking sports betting. I love the action. I love being in a sports book. I love being on TV. I love that Carver High and Mavi are there doing well, and it's really how I ended up here. That's the whole story. It's just the craziest thing ever, but that's the kit and caboodle, belly to belly. That's how I grew up in Pittsburgh, and that's how I sit here today at 54 years old. Anyway, I love doing the show on TV every day. Catch Coast to Coast at 4 every day, East. And then in-game live every day at 7, Monday through Friday. And then you know where to find Pharrell on the Bench podcast on iTunes and wherever podcasts are available. And it runs at midnight and 5 a.m. on the Fantasy Sports Radio app and Fantasy Sports Network app. And it's also on TuneIn. And it's good being in bed with iHeart. I'd rather be with iHeart than LoserCom because LoserCom's run by a bunch of idiots. And iHeart's bigger than them, and iHeart crushes LoserCom like a bug under their shoe. LoserCom's like a cockroach in your kitchen at night when you go in for a glass of water, and then you got to step on it and kill it. Because every time I have a chance, I'm going to step on and kill LoserCom every chance I get. So I hope you enjoy the shows on Sports Grid. Tell your friends, spread the word, follow me at Scott Pharrell, at Pharrell on Grid. Follow me on LinkedIn. Follow me on Facebook at Scott Pharrell and / Pharrell on the Grid and Pharrell fan page. I got 3 Facebook pages. And follow us on Instagram, Pharrell on Grid and Scott_Pharrell. All right. So there you go. That's everything you need to know about how Pharrell on a Bench ended up here on Sports Grid. Everybody's doing it. They just won't admit it. Shake it.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? Sports Grid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, Sports Grid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is Sports Grid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.